KUOW's The Record. As we were just discussing, Seattle's getting harder to afford. Here's one way to afford it. Get one of those tech jobs you read about, right? Does that sound inspiring, boring, expensive? Is learning to code just what you got to do to feed yourself? Or is there joy in coding? Lissa Walzer is a former biologist who became a software developer at Redfin through a software boot camp. And Sherry Allen is a photographer turned engineer who teaches coding. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
First, I think we should define our terms. When we say coding, learning to code, Lissa, what do we mean?
We usually mean writing software that is used various places. Most of the boot camps focus on websites or apps that are on your smartphone.
Writing software. So, Sherry, my kids at school, they have this website called Lightbot, and the kids have to write in the instructions to tell the little cute robot when to turn left and right and walk forward and jump up and jump down and light up the squares. Are those instructions coding?
It absolutely is. Yeah. At the most basic level, writing software is writing a set of instructions that some computer is going to execute for you. And robotics is the most fun way to start because you get to see a little guy move.
It is awfully cute.
Yep. But then it gets a little more complicated from there. But you're still just writing instructions.
Okay. So as you just heard, as everyone just heard, I'm pretty clueless. I have my 7-year-old's understanding of coding. So one question I have is, let's say I were to quit this job tomorrow and said, you know, I gotta learn to code. That's how I'm going to feed my family. How long do you think it would take before I could, okay, now I know enough to have a new career, Sherry?
The people I've seen, either through teaching or through mentoring, it tends to be about a 1-year process if they're not going to go to university for a computer science degree. And it starts out with learning on their own. There are a million resources online and they're free. And starting with those free resources, teaching yourself a little something and finding out if you like it is the first step. And then from there, there are a lot of more formal programs from universities, community colleges, and boot camps, of course.
And Lissa, what you went through one of these boot camps. What kind of potential jobs are we talking about? Help me envision this field I might be getting into.
Most of the jobs are in internet software companies. There are more recognizable ones like Amazon. Redfin is the one that I'm at. And then there are also a lot of smaller startups that you don't hear about, but that still employ people. And those are usually very small places, maybe, 1 to 5 employees.
Okay, so Redfin. You're at Redfin. This is real estate. And you're using your coding to do what when you go to work? What are you building or writing?
Well, the whole idea of Redfin is that we're a technology-powered company. So we build a lot of software that helps either customers or agents to find homes. So like I am on the websites, on the customer-facing sites, and we build a lot of features that are focused on helping people find the perfect home that they want.
Is it fun or is it just, it's a job and it's a good, you're in the right field of the future?
I definitely find it extremely satisfying. It has moments of fun, but it can also be extremely frustrating when you're working on a problem that can be sometimes extremely difficult. But
that's nice. I've been frustrated on the other side of the computer. So it's frustrating for you too.
It definitely has its moments, yeah.
Sherry, you teach folks who are learning to code as a second career, as you did as well?
Yes.
What's different about later learners? If anything, you have your digital natives and the people who just say, maybe I'll switch careers. It's all about the coding.
Later learners often come into it a little bit intimidated. I've also taught younger people who did not already spend 10 years in marketing, and they are not as nervous about it. Later learners have heard that coding is hard, that software is hard, and they're not sure they're smart enough. Or, when you're 35 and you've been good at something for 5 years already, starting over and being really bad at something is really hard on your ego.
Thank you for mentioning smart. Do I have to be a whiz kid to get into coding, or should I not get into coding unless I'm really super good at, I don't know, math or logic.
I don't know. Does anyone ever think they're really smart enough to do something hard?
Good question.
I think that being good at logic is important. One of the prerequisites, a program I was working with was trying to recruit people who had no technical experience to learn. And one of the measures we came up with that might indicate future success with writing software was knitting. Absolutely. If you can follow a knitting pattern to make like a sweater or a complicated hat, you have a pretty good idea of how to execute a bunch of small steps to end up with a bigger project. And that's what a lot of software is. You know, your team has an idea for a big feature you're going to write, and you need to break it down into smaller steps to get there. The actual writing the code, you know, remembering where the semicolons go, that's not that hard. But thinking about it logically and breaking things down into smaller pieces is the majority of the job. If you're good at that, you'll do well.
Logically, but also creatively. I mean, knitting, you are thinking of, you're being creative, I hope, making something beautiful.
Yeah. And
you feel that way?
I absolutely feel that way about software. I would not call it art, but I would absolutely call it a craft. You are creating something, which is so fun, so rewarding.
Lissa, you said that the most successful person in your software boot camp came from theater?
Yeah, she did. She was the one who I think arguably had some of the best projects. All of her projects were, they were very well designed and very interactive and intuitive. And I think she actually ended up going to a company that does software for children.
Software for children. So coding, I should think of it as just as potentially creative as any other field is potentially creative or not, depending on what you put into it? I mean, is it like at that level now that coding is not just, go do it. If you want to eat regularly, go do a bunch of numbers, whether you like it or not. It's just not that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the key with software development is there's never any one right way to do anything. So there is a lot of leeway to debate with people, to find new ways of approaching things. There is a lot of creativity that's involved with it. And especially being able to think kind of outside the box for solving problems is a huge benefit.
And Sherry, you're nodding. You're a photographer.
I am, and I know so many people in software who have backgrounds in theater or fine arts. It's so funny. But
why do you think that is?
You know, as my mom so astutely pointed out when we talked about me going to art school, it's kind of hard to make a living in fine arts.
Oh, well, there's that connection.
But software is creative, and people want to pay you for it, which is really awesome. But also, if you're on... Also, it's interacting with users often. And if you love theater, you love, you know, making people have a reaction, entertaining people. And if you enjoy that, then maybe you're going to enjoy building web applications that are fun to use or easy to use or make people's lives more interesting.
Yeah. And that's all this is probably obvious to somebody who's not my age, you know, that of course, web application, you use them for fun and all the time. And I'm still stuck in this kind of Unix, like ones and zeros and other stuff. What about someone who is a people person? This is also another maybe outdated stereotype of coding is that you're alone in a basement. What about that, Lissa?
I think it's definitely important to have strong social skills as a programmer. You know, you don't work by yourself in a lot of cases. You work on a team of people. And it's constant interaction with everybody. You know, I don't work sitting by myself in a tiny, dark little room. I work in a room filled with all of my team members. And every single day, you know, you have to talk with your designer and with your product manager about the way your project is going. You have to communicate with your fellow developers. You know, when I want to deploy my code into production, it doesn't just happen. It has to go through reviews from other developers, from my teammates. I have to talk with them about the decisions that I made. It's a very interactive process.
Agreed, Sherry?
Agreed, yeah. Even if you're writing software for a machine that's going to bend wrought iron into cool shapes, you know, there's still going to be a human somewhere that pushes buttons and cleans that machine when it's not being used. and will end up interacting with your software somehow. You never really get away from working with other people.
Can the average coder look forward to coming up with, realistically here, coming up with out-of-the-box ideas that express their personality and get implemented? Or is the reality that there's a group of people who are more the, I don't know, the brainstormer types, and they tell the coders how to implement their ideas, then it's real specialized?
I think the room for innovation and individual ideas depends on the kind of environment you're working in. But in general, I make my own decisions about the code I'm going to write. So there is always some level of personal decision making.
You think you could teach me to code?
Yeah.
Given what I've displayed over the last several minutes. Deep silence that I respect. I accept
yes,
your judgment.
Nodding. Absolutely.
So when coders equal to those people who think coding and they think Amazon, what are some of the jobs that we're overlooking? Because these days, like what field doesn't use computers in some way? So what should we be thinking about?
I think technology touches our lives in so many different ways that it's just in places you don't even think about. Like, for example, a lot of refrigerators have screens on them these days. Somebody programmed that. You have, you know, locks on your front door that can be unlocked with your smartphone.
As a matter of fact, we're going to be talking about that in a moment. Have you heard of the Amazon key idea?
Yeah, I saw a few headlines.
Yeah, I'll pause there for any reaction you want to have to the idea of letting Amazon open your door and walk in.
Mm.
I'm getting a face from Lissa. No, not into it. Mm. Sherry, wow, two thumbs down. Why do you say that?
You know, we were just having this conversation before the show about how, as programmers, we tend to not have a lot of Internet of Things in our houses.
Really? That's interesting. Tell me about that.
My house is extremely unconnected.
Really? Why do you think that is?
We've written software. We know that even the best software has bugs and security vulnerabilities. It happens.
Privacy concerns.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. So the people who are writing the software know that I should not be using software to the level that corporations would like me to? Is that fair?
I think it really depends on the product and your use of it.
Yeah.
And the relative risks, right? Like the risk of me having a connected refrigerator, if things go wrong there, my milk will spoil. If things go wrong with an internet-connected lock on my front door, my cat might get stolen. It's a much bigger risk.
Your mind went to your cat. Interesting.
My priority is straight.
Uh-huh.
So give me a worst-case scenario. Here I am getting a chance to learn from you guys. What's something that you wish KOW listeners knew about how software actually goes down? Or vulnerabilities, or I don't know, you tell me.
I think the biggest thing is that there are people writing this software, so nothing is ever going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And most software systems are, at this point, huge. They're so complex. Even with large teams of really smart, really determined people working on them, it's almost impossible to catch every potential security vulnerability. There's a lot of really smart people on the other side looking for ways to exploit it as well.
Okay, so I interrupted you when you brought up internet opened doors, but you were on a roll. You talked about, you know, refrigerators, and I like that. So tell me, are there other jobs that I should be thinking about, as I said, beyond Amazon, you know, what other career possibilities should I have in mind?
I think one thing to remember, we think often about all software jobs being in software companies, but it's everywhere at this point. KUOW has a very nice website. Someone who writes code built that for you. And someone takes these shows and turns them into podcast recordings and distributes them somehow. Those are software jobs.
I like all of those people, by the way.
I bet they're
very
cool,
human,
right?
And cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing.
I'll pass
to think
on
about,
the compliment.
Another thing to think about is that software and technology isn't just powered by developers. There are a lot of other people who go into making these products. There are product managers. There are designers. And a lot of these people don't necessarily have coding backgrounds or necessarily ever even need to code, but they're still as big a part of the industry as a developer.
Do you wish we'd even stop talking about tech bros?
Definitely.
Tell me about that.
I think it's a very unfortunate stereotype that affects the attitude of people in the industry, and I also think it can have a big effect on people who are thinking about going into the industry. I took a programming class at UW when I was in college, and in a class of 30 people, I was the only woman in that class. And that can have a very serious effect on people.
So you're saying the tech bro stereotype is accurate, but you wish that weren't the PR?
I don't think it's accurate. I certainly know at Redfin, I've never worked with or encountered anybody there that could fit that stereotype. But I have met people like that in the industry. So I think it's really on companies to build the kind of culture that they want.
What does tech bro mean to you? I should make sure we're all talking about the same thing.
Oh, it means the kind of person who's been coding since they were, 2 months old. And so everybody else, just isn't a real engineer. It means that if you don't, drink beer every day or, Mountain Dew and eat Doritos or something like that, then you're not a real engineer.
I think the concept of a tech bro is someone who's a gatekeeper, someone who has kind of limited life experience and doesn't value skills that they don't possess. I also wish we could talk a little bit less about tech bros because I feel like the villainization of them means that those people who do fall into that category start to get this us versus them mindset and are never going to get cooler, right? Because that criticism makes them, more defensive. But I wish they were cooler.
Do you see Seattle culture as having gone to tech bro? Or is that a caricature?
I think with Amazon especially, we're seeing a huge influx of people in Seattle who are men who are relatively young, fresh out of college, have made real good tech money their entire working career, no matter how short it is, and who want a particular set of services and entertainment options in their city and have a pretty large economic impact. And so they're getting the things they want, which is pushing out options that different demographics might enjoy.
I'm talking with Sherry Allen, a sculptor and an engineer who teaches coding, and Lissa Walzer, former biologist, now a developer at Redfin. So just to finally turn to the future, I've got these three kids, fifth grade, second grade, second grade. Do you think that I ought to make sure they know how to code?
I think it's something that you should consider introducing them to. And then if they take a natural interest in it, encourage that. But I don't think that everybody has to know how to code.
I would agree. I think an equal argument could be made that efficient management of fresh water through a city and home is crucial to our modern society, and so everyone should learn plumbing, right? Uh-huh. It's absurd. Not everyone needs to learn to code, but coding is super fun, super rewarding, and yeah, introduce everyone to it, and if they like it, go for it, and if they don't, well, hey, plumbing is really cool.
True. And speaking of someone who'll always have work, so then is it, final question, is it part of the problem that more people are learning to code, or is it part of a solid defense against the downsides of, bad coding, bad algorithms? How do you feel about this? You talked about some of the opportunities for abuse. Do you wish that people who were not into, who don't think of themselves as coders, would become that way, and the scene would change?
I think there's a lot of research showing that more diverse teams writing software write quantitatively better software. So yes, I absolutely think more people getting into it who have different backgrounds improve the quality of the output. I also wish there were a lot more really awesome career options that were as cool and had as good of job security as writing software.
By the way, Sherry, you work with an organization called Unloop. Its mission is building the pipeline from prison to tech. Tell me about that.
Man, they are so cool. They started by doing just one day introduction to robotics workshops inside of prisons. And I've volunteered at several of those. And they're incredibly cool. One guy I talked to there said he was so excited. He was an older guy. He was so excited to be learning this. He had been wanting to do more technology learning, and he had been in prison for quite a long time. And the last opportunity he had to learn anything technology-wise was to learn DOS, because that was required for the word processing program that he was learning.
DOS is the, that was pre-Windows, right, from the 80s and before.
Yep. That's how long it had been since there had been an opportunity for folks in that facility to learn anything about technology.
Well, does tech not have the same barriers for people with criminal records as other sectors do?
Well, once I started volunteering with Unloop, I started asking at job fairs what companies' policies were about felony convictions. And I got a lot of recruiters looking real nervous and not having an answer. But what's really nice about tech skills, especially web skills, right? So if you can build websites or web applications, you can be self-employed. Everyone needs a website. The pizza place on the corner needs a website. If you have those skills, you can support yourself. And tech really prides itself on being a meritocracy, right? Anyone who can do the work is welcome. You don't necessarily need a fancy degree. You don't need a pedigree. You just need to be able to do the work. And so there are a lot of companies who are more open to people with, you know, more unfortunate backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. What did you two think of the whole flapper on the Google engineer, you know, the memo writing about whether women were suited for, I'm getting a major eye roll from Sherry. You have a very expressive face. I really enjoy
watching
it. A face
for radio.
You.
Thank you.
Yes. What did you think of that whole conversation?
I feel like that is just emblematic of why people get so upset about tech bros, you know, like, really, really? In this year of our Lord, 2017, you are going to publicly, in a professional setting, say that half the population is just biologically unsuited to a particular thing. Like, come on, buddy. And then be upset when people react poorly to that. What the heck?
How representative of in your industry is that?
I mean, I just want to go back a little bit and say the biggest thing is that I feel like a lot of these stereotypes and roles get pushed on girls from an extremely early age. And so at this point, I don't even think we can say what's biologically kind of suited and what's not, because these choices are being imprinted on girls from the time they're infants practically.
Mm-hmm.
So we just don't know what is, you know, like what's biology and what's just conditioning at this point.
So are you finding barriers for yourself, gender-based barriers in your work, do you think?
I've encountered that less so, but I'm also very fortunate to be at a company that has, you know, a woman CTO and has a large number of women engineers at the company. I have occasionally heard different stories from other women.
Yeah, I've absolutely encountered sexism, but, you know, I switched to tech later in life. I've worked in restaurants. I've worked in retail. Have you ever been in a restaurant kitchen? There's a lot worse sexism there. Man, it's nasty. What I like about tech is that we're having these conversations and we're trying to do better. And I wish that was not so rare, but, man, we're trying.
Hey, thanks for coming in and telling us about, you know, the premise of this was someone thinking, well, geez, maybe coding is the only thing I got to do, and how should I feel about that? And you've just really fleshed it out for me and for us in thinking about what would a career in coding and software look like. So thanks for this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Sherry Allen, an engineer. She teaches coding. Lissa Walzer, a developer at Redfin. Great to talk with you.
Thank you.
It's The Record on KUOW Seattle. We were talking about that Amazon key, and we'll come back to that subject in just a moment.